Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants.
Let's go, Giants! SF Giants!
With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Wednesday, June 2nd, 2021, and this is episode 226 of The TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of your, once again, first place San Francisco Giants. We're coming to you live on Facebook, where we do it every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know. We're recording all over the place. But joining me today, Eric's not here, but the OG founder of TortureCast, Willie Jules Gregory. How you doing, man?
I am fantastic. It'd be a lot better if the Giants did not get destroyed last night. I was really expecting with the starter, like you, we were texting. It was one of those games where like everything's set up for the Giants to just get win two in a row here against the Angels. And weirdly enough, this is why you have to play the games. That did not happen. But outside of that fact, and here's the thing though, losing the game and staying in first place. Yes, let's go. Staying first place in the best division in baseball. I'm in.
So we just passed the one-third mark, right, before last night's game, 54 games in or whatever. And, yeah, they still have the best record in all of the National League. And they're really just behind, was it the Rays, I think?
Yeah, like a half game at most, right? Yeah. So, and the Rays also just, what, won 15 of 16 or something like that?
Yeah, something ridiculous like that.
Yeah, you know. The Giants have yet to have a streak. Like a real streak, too. It's just been solid, consistent, winning baseball.
I think that's what it's been, right? It's just been super, super consistent. I mean, yeah, they don't need to win eight in a row. They're winning, like, you know, they'll win seven out of nine in a stretch, then lose, you know, three out of five, and then win another seven out of nine or something like that. And that's what they just did this past week.
Yeah, the Padres just had their hot streak, and we weathered the storm, right? So the fact that they were as hot as they were and we're still a half game up now, after all that, after everything kind of the dust settles, you know, playing a bunch of seven games against the Dodgers, you know what I mean? It's like all this was supposed to be the part of the season where all the house of cards was going to fall apart, you know? everyone was like, yeah, no, I mean, the Giants, whatever. They started hot, but yeah, just give it a moment. Those pitchers aren't going to stay that good.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of got through that period. So now I think it's
a third of the way through the season. That's pretty freaking good, man. I mean, to have the best or second best record in all of baseball, and they're hanging with the Padres and Dodgers. In fact, Baseball Reference just released their – well, they always have them updated, right? But MLB, glommed onto it and posted it out there. But basically, they forecast still the Padres winning the West, but the Dodgers and the Giants facing in the wild card. And now, obviously, I want the Giants to win the West, and that may not happen. Obviously, they have a good shot at making the wild card. Baseball Reference puts them at like an 82% chance now of getting into the playoffs, which is like, at the beginning of the season, it was like 6%. I mean, they like didn't give them a chance, right? Yeah. And now they're giving them like a 4 out of 5 chance. But could you imagine a wild card game against the Dodgers? I mean, they should have had that last year. They were one game short of that. Remember that.
That's true. If
they had won one of those last three games that they all lost in a row, it would have been Giants-Dodgers. But
you bring up one of three games, and it's triggering me right now because we had this big pool tournament thing that I went to, and we finished third place. But in the match to get to the finals, so the way it works is they have you race to a certain number based on your handicaps. Mm-hmm. We had to get to 12 games. The other team had to get to 10. We were sitting on 11, and they were on 7. So we had to win one of the last three games. And one of our guys scratched on the 8-ball. And then I missed. Like, I rattled the shot, so it barely didn't go in. It, like, hangs in the pocket, and the other guy runs out. And then the last game, our best player just kind of, like, couldn't get the job done, and we lost. It was like, And now you're reminding me of, yeah, what was happening last
just season. Needed one game.
It's just so frustrating because you're just like, yeah, all got it. One game. Just one. Just get lucky, man. One time. Just have, I know.
There are those moments, right? Like 1993, we've talked about that ad nauseum.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 103 wins still wasn't enough. It's like, God damn it. If the Rockies had beaten the Braves one time, man.
Sure.
Would have been freaking beautiful.
So. Everybody's comparing this team, by the way, to all of like our best teams, our best record teams, you know?
Yeah.
And what's funny is, as a Giants fan, I think of all of our teams that had the best records. I'm like, those are the teams that didn't win the World Series. You know, none of those teams actually pulled it off, unless you go back to like the 50s or whatever. But, you know, for me, as in my lifetime of being a Giants fan, it's like our teams that won it all were kind of scratching for everything they could get, you know, and our teams that were just kind of powerhouses were never able to get the job done. This team feels very much, by the way, I don't know if you're getting this sense, but feels very much like the 2010 Giants.
Oh, yeah. This is exact vibes that it has. I mean, again, a team that wasn't forecast to do much, just kind of, you know, this patchwork of random veterans and cast-offs and minor leaguers and retreads. But it does seem to be working. And, like, that's one thing we're going to talk about later today is, obviously, they've had a lot of injuries lately, a lot of transactions. But there just doesn't – I mean, there isn't a Barry Bonds on this team. Obviously, there's a Buster Posey and stuff like that. But – there are so many of these parts that are interchangeable. They're all very similar to one another. And it just seems like Next Man Up seems to fill the holes at least adequately to hold, you know, kind of just right the ship and keep it sailing in the straight line. So, you know, when guys go down, I used to kind of go, oh, God, that's a big hole at, you know, wherever, short, second, right field. But now it kind of feels like, oh, you know, this guy Flores will come in and fill in fine. DeBon will come in and fill in fine. Because just things are clicking on all cylinders, and it really is the pitching that's keeping them, you know, kind of where they are right now.
Sure.
But yeah, that's why it does really feel like 2010. I mean, before last night's game, because they're exactly a third of the way through, they're forecast to win 102 games. Now, I don't think they're going to win 102, but I mean, that's pretty damn good. I mean,
win 102. I mean, God damn.
Well, that's what I mean.
What did we all get? I guess like 87 or something at the beginning of the season. Or was it Eric who guessed? We guessed very low. Eric, I think, didn't he give it plus over 90?
Maybe. Let's see.
Or
Willie,
close to?
You guessed 75.
75 is what I guessed.
Yeah, I looked up the notes. Eric was the high. He's the one. And he might be pretty accurate. 88.
88. Okay. All right.
And we were all like, whoa, Eric, that's a little high.
Yeah, like, hey, settle down, buddy.
Okay, calm down now.
Yeah.
I know, because he had 96 in 2018, and that's all shot the bed there. And I had 79, right below 500. So, yeah, I mean – they really
if they finish below 500, that would be
a
huge disappointment. Yeah,
more than a huge disappointment. They'd be one of the worst teams in the league from here on out. Oh my God, I see myself clipping this and playing at the season end show. But I hope that doesn't.
But I mean, you're 100% right though that it's like these. It's just all these mixing and matching and plugging guys. Like, who would have thought that like Vossler and Lamont Wade would be guys we'd be talking about? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? At this point in the year. But you know, here we are, right? It's just been this kind of revolving door of the cast of characters. This is constantly changing, and you're just kind of like, I mean, whatever, get in there, do your thing, and pick the team up. Everyone's kind of having their moment, and that's really important, I think, at the end of the year if you are in the playoffs and you are playing baseball that matters. There's not going to be a bunch of guys who like haven't had to step up, right? Everyone's had to step up. You know, and even now you see like, oh, Posey's been hot all year. He's actually cooled off a little bit, but the offense is still kind of forging ahead, right? And doing okay. So it's very cool to see. And that's why the 2010 vibes are real. Cause yeah, the team didn't really have a star, right? I mean, guys like Aubrey Huff were like carrying the offense and stuff.
The waiver wire pickup, Cody Ross, which was really just a cock block the Padres, right?
Yeah, and they ended up hitting like three home runs in the division series. So
Burrell, you know, obviously, Huff, you know, who we won't talk about.
Yeah, fuck that guy, but whatever.
But he was there. No, just a whole, and that was, of course, you know, Buster's first full season, Baumgartner's first full season in the majors. So those guys were just emerging stars. They hadn't hit anything yet. So,
but if you think about it, too, Gausman, like, you guys drew the parallel between him and Timmy. Yeah. He's got that feel right now going for him where it's just, you know, it's like if it, all these kind of pieces are, I think the one thing we're missing is we're missing our Brian Wilson, right?
Yeah, we're definitely missing a Brian Wilson. I don't think anyone thought that Jake McGee was going to be that guy. No. Unfortunately, he's definitely fallen on hard times lately. Uh-huh. Tyler Rogers has been very good. I mean, let's before his last outing in Dodger Stadium, he had a sub-1 ERA. And yet every time he goes out there, I'm just always like, oh.
Yeah.
I know. It's just, you know what? Time. It's just because I think we're just all viscerally used to a closer just blowing cheese, right? And this guy does the exact opposite. I mean, yeah. He throws from the exact opposite arm slot, and he throws like a max of 82 miles an hour. So you just think of, you know, frisbee sliders. Here we go. They're just going to get left over the plate. And one was in Dodger Stadium. But mm-hmm. for the most part, I mean, he's been just great, you know? So, but it, yeah, it, no Brian Wilson yet. And last night I was fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to go to the Giants game, and I had been undefeated. I think I was like, I had won 6 in a row attending Giants games, going through last year and into 2019. So I was feeling pretty good. And that's what we were talking about. I was texting you and Eric last night, and it was like, man, it just seems so set up, right? The team's hot. They're at home where they're playing great ball. Well, on the road though, they're playing way better now. I mean, they've won like 9 of 10 on the road now, 7 in a row at one point, right? They've just been blasting.
Yeah, no, they finally fixed that.
Yeah, it's been great. But here it is, you know, Alex Wood, who's been fantastic this year. The Angels without Ohtani, without Trout. Carey Crowley was sitting behind me in the press box, and he was the one I tweeted about last night, who basically said, "And the Angels are pretty much the Colorado Rockies of the American League." And it was like, "Ouch." Total, you know, knock. It did. It seemed set up like, oh, this is an easy win for the Giants tonight. And 8-1 the other way. You know, it's just like, that's why it's baseball. I mean, weird things
that's
happen.
Why you got to play the games.
That's why you got to play the game, you know, because Alex Wood just, man, you could see it start to unravel. He just couldn't find the strike zone. He just was like bouncing pitches and, you know,
I don't know how
guys.
Obvious it was to you from the box, but the strike zone was incredibly small. And he got very frustrated early on with that. And the other pitcher seemed to be able to weather that, the Angel starter. But he got really frustrated. And then he started kind of, you know, just leaving them dead center. And, you know, once he gave up the walks, he got raked. And that was it. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, it was a bad night for Alex Wood because and there was a couple of large big two out hits by Rendon. He had 5 ribbies last night, you know, a couple of those base knocks with the bases loaded and with 2 runners on. I mean, that was the difference in the game. Of course, the Giants ended up only scoring 1 run, so what are you going to do with 1 run, you know? I mean, it's one of those games where, like, I was bummed that I went, and, you know, it's like you always want to see a win. But, you know, if you're going to lose, I don't mind losing 8-1 when the offense didn't work and the pitching didn't work. Cause you're like, okay, that was just, it's just one of those stinkers that happens from time to time for every team. So it wasn't that big of a deal, but Eric texted me last night and said, basically you're seeing the River Cats tonight. And that was kind of touching on what you were just talking about. I mean, look, we've got Trump and Duggar and Vossler and Trapiano and Wade Jr. And they've, you know, traded for a couple of guys. Guys have been in the majors for a long time as journeymen who just came up. It was Leon last night. They just got that other guy from the Mariners. He was just called up. I mean, these are guys, like, at the beginning of the season, I would have been like, who, what? They're on the 40-man? Like, I don't get this. But that's Farhan. You know, that's he is just fantastic with him and his staff in finding those, I'm not going to call them diamonds in the rough, but just interchangeable parts that, you know, it's like, okay, this part is not working right now, so let's just put in this part. Okay, it works for a couple weeks. Oh, got to remove him, put him back down, got to put in a new part. It just kind of feels like they're always tinkering, but whatever they're doing, it seems to be working. And for a lot of the Farhan naysayers, I don't know how you can criticize them at this point.
You can't, yeah. Yeah, I'm getting to the point where I'm like, I can't really criticize anything about the Giants front office or the coaching staff. It's just like, they're clearly overachieving with the, you know, a bunch of castaways, you know what I mean? Guys who other teams don't even want.
Yeah, well, don't tell that to the people on social media, because there was a guy I won't read his thing or give him his name, but I was just having fun. I have fun reading these guys because they're such trolls. But, you know, one, it was going off and super negative, and people are like, dude, what are you talking about? And he literally said he was a Kapler basher, right?
Mm.
And it came out, and even though they're best record in the National League and all these other things, right? It's like, how much better could he be doing with this? Like,
I know. Yeah, what
he was given so few tools, yeah. You know, and everything's working, and it's kind of like a patchwork, but it's working right now. And this dude literally said, I could do as good or better than Gabe Kapler. And I was just like, that's it. I mean, you've officially jumped the shark. Like,
yeah.
When Joe Schmo can come off the streets and take over a National League leading San Francisco Giants team and do a better job than the current manager, I mean, I'm just saying that why hasn't Farhan found you? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Gabe could probably do your job better. Right?
This is look, there's a lot of idiots in the world, and it's just hilarious fun. Because, yeah, that once a guy says something like that, you're like, all right, we're just not talking about this anymore.
Yeah, it's like,
you're just
whenever
an idiot.
You say that.
That's the thing. It's like, if you're going to blame 21 losses on Kapler, you also have to give him credit for 34 wins. That's just,
no, you can't do that. That's just it's logic, not him getting the wins. It's the players and staff.
Players losses, got all the wins. He has all the losses.
Those walk-off losses, those six walk-off losses on the road, those are all him. Because he made the bullpen decision, and that's what happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's insane, but what are you going to do? But, yeah, we haven't been on the air for a couple of weeks, but, man, they went 8-5 since we last recorded, and things were not looking good right after we signed off. They got swept at home by the Dodgers, and a lot of people, and I'm not saying I wasn't one of them, were like, ooh, they hung with the Padres, but now both – that was when the Padres and Dodgers started getting hot for those two-week stretch. Mm-hmm. And it was like, okay – maybe this is the difference between the haves and the have-nots, right? But the Giants have always played the Dodgers competitively, even when they finished 40 games behind them. There's something about that rivalry that always stokes the fire. So it's kind of like hoping they would come back. What do? They go right out, and they start sweeping more teams, right? And then they come back to Dodger Stadium. Well, they had a two-game mini-sweep in Arizona. They come back to Dodger Stadium, and boom, they lose
the first one. Yep, and we're like, here we go again. Yeah.
Crap, man. They can beat everyone but the freaking Dodgers. Now they're 0-4 against them. And it started to feel that weird, hopeless feeling. But you're like, they have 15 games left against these guys. They're not going to lose all of them.
But that first game against the Dodgers, too, was the day after scoring 19 against the Reds.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this feels like a lifetime ago at this point. But, I mean, you remember that. We scored 19 against the Reds, finishing a sweep on the road. And they were like, hey, home against the Dodgers, let's go. And then we scored one. And everybody was like, oh. And I love this thing, too, that everybody says, oh, we should have saved some runs from yesterday.
That's not how it works. I mean, I know in the standings they have the run differential, which is nice, but it's not a run bank.
You don't have a certain amount of them that you get to kind of distribute as you will throughout the season.
Kapler calls time and he's like, I'm going to the ATM. Withdraw some runs. We need some.
Last night. Yeah. Look, we'll give some of the ones that we'll use against the Diamondbacks to get a couple this game.
I know. It's just funny when you hear people say that. I wish it worked that way, but last time I checked, baseball didn't total up your run differential at the end of the year. As your playoff seeding, but
in fact, when you're scoring runs, add on because guys get hot. You know what I mean? So, we lost that first one against them 2-1, and then we lose 6-3, and then the third game felt just like give up 11.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it was
the blowout. It was early. It was 10-1 or whatever. End up being 11-6 or 11-5 or something because Buster, you know, hit one out late. But that was just one of those like brutal sweeps, and you know, Dodger fans were preening and all that stuff. But you know, the Giants go down there, lose the first game of a 4-game set, and now you're thinking, oh my God. I mean, they had to at least split this series, and now they got to win 2 out of 3, and they've lost all 4 against them this year, and things weren't looking good. And then in game 2, it was funny too, because that first game, by the way, remember David Price started, and it was a pitch by committee. And
he only pitched like 3 innings or something.
Yeah,
like that,
it was like 2 or 3 innings, right?
They're like, get as much as they can out of him, and then it's going to be a bullpen game. So after like we had only scored or whatever one, or none or whatever it was, but on Price. I was like, that's fine. We got six innings of the bullpen. We'll get something.
Yeah, we'll get something. Yeah, and it just didn't happen. And, you know, their bullpen, I think it was seven pitchers strung together, and, yeah, held them to one run. And it was frustrating because then you're looking at Walker Buehler and Kershaw and Urias. Well, not in that order. It was Buehler, Urias, and then Kershaw.
Yeah, we were able to dodge Bauer this time around.
Yeah.
Which,
and, you know, you're looking, I mean, these guys, they haven't faced Kershaw yet this year, but Urias and Buehler, of course, have dominated them. So it's kind of like, crap, they couldn't win that first bullpen game. That's not good. You know, they could lose three out of four here, maybe even get swept if they really run into the buzzsaw of their pitching. But, hey, look, the Giants have good pitching themselves. They got tattooed, you know, back at home. But the pitching stepped up in that first game. Sorry, the second game of the series. It was a tight game. Buehler was pitching well, and it was 2-2. And then Buster comes through, as he's been doing most of this year, with that three-run bomb. Giants go up 5-2, and you're just like, yeah, here we come, baby. Okay, we're going to get one win out of five, you know? Just, like, stop the bleeding.
Sure.
And then here we go to the ninth inning, right? You get Tyler Rogers and his sub-1 ERA. And you're like, all right, I mean, he's doing better than anyone else. Why wouldn't you use him? Of course, you still see the naysayers. Why are they putting this guy out there? There's so many other options. They're like, who? They've already used McGee. Like, he's already given up a lot of blown saves. Like, they're just trying something, man. He's got some of the best stats on the team, you know? So he goes out there, and fortunately, you know, a couple of dinks, I guess, or maybe there's a walk in there, and then he gives up the pinch hit home run to the unlikely Austin Barnes. That was, like, not, you know, not expected. I don't think Dave Roberts was expecting a home run in that situation. But, of course, it was with two outs, as they always are, right? These gut punches, especially like the one in Colorado, same way. It was like the five or six straight two-out hits to the Blackman walk-off. I mean, it was just like, you've got to be effing kidding me. Like, why is this team have this mental block? They are so good in most facets of the game, except the bullpen is way below average overall. But even on top of that, they've given up six walk-off wins on the road. Six.
Yeah.
In May. I know. That's insane. Like,
we gave up a walk-off, two walk-offs to the Pirates.
Yeah.
The Pirates can't even get a friggin' force out at first. And we're giving up walk-offs.
Games, right?
Yeah, we're giving up walk-offs to them.
It just felt like there was that mental block. And I know closers need that mental strength and toughness, but it just felt like anytime they got close to nailing down a game, it was like, nope, the wheels are going to fall off. So it kind of felt like that. And it felt like that on the next pitch when Albert Pujols comes up. And it was like, when the Dodgers signed him off the waiver wire from the Angels, I kind of chuckled at it going, oh, he's going to hit a couple of home runs for them. Sure, whatever. But, man, he's been hot otherwise, you know.
Yeah, he would have a couple.
He would. Well, he ended up hitting one later in the series, of course. And we'll talk about that. I think he has three or four with the Dodgers already now. He bombs one to left field. And, of course, Mike Tauchman with easily the catch of the year in the majors.
Oh, yeah.
Not just for the agility and what it was for robbing a home run, but what it meant and what it resulted in. Because that was a walk-off home run that he pulled back, that he snatched from the ether. And then the Giants turn around in the 10th inning off Kenley Jansen, who's been hot this year. He's been back to his old self. And they got three runs off of him, and they ended up winning 8-5. So, man, I tell you, it was a back and forth gut punch game, probably the game of the year so far in terms of entertainment and drama and how those things happen. But, man, this is why you guys named this freaking podcast Torture Cast. It's exactly for moments like that, you know, that Dwayne Kuiper coined back in 2010, because it does feel like we're back to that torture baseball again.
I wonder if that is a walk-off home run, if the Giants just end up getting swept the rest of the series.
I don't see how that might not do that, yeah.
Yeah, it really felt like that was just the turning point, you know. Tauchman makes that catch. By the way, this was also the first game that I hadn't been able to watch, basically, of the entire year. I've pretty much been able to watch every single game. This was Friday night, right? So Friday, I'm heading out to the pool tournament, and we're playing all friggin' night. I'm in this big convention center in Temple with no TVs anywhere. And obviously, if there were, they wouldn't have the Giants Dodgers game on.
Yeah.
And I go to look at the highlights, and I'm like, what the fuck did I miss? Holy 8-5 back and forth. Buster Posey hits the go-ahead, and then the tying home run, and then Rob a home run, and then finish the game in extra innings. I mean, everything about that game was incredible. I did go back and watch the full thing later. Normally, I would watch like a condensed game, but I was like, "This, I have to see,
especially the last two
everything innings, in innings, pace." Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it was one of those games where, you know, it was just incredible. And obviously, to be against the Dodgers, to be also the top three teams in the best division in baseball, like it had everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pujols being in there. You know what I mean? Like it was incredible. So that game was massive, and I think it really did. It just turned the tide. And we just win out the rest of the series. No problem.
Yeah, it was great. It wasn't that it wasn't without some drama, of course, because, you know, what was it? The third game in the series. I mean, they blew them out 11-6. They kind of returned the favor by almost the exact same score that the Dodgers, you know, blew them out back at Oracle the previous weekend. So that was nice. And Logan Webb was fantastic. He's been good back off the IL. He's got his ERA down to under 4.
So he looks like he has that sinker kind of under control now. Whereas earlier on, before he went on the IL, he just couldn't control the movement. It was just so explosive, and it was a great pitch. He just couldn't get it in the zone. But now he looks like he's kind of got it back. Maybe he's not overthrowing or something. Maybe he's eased back a bit. But he looks solid, and we need him, to be honest. So.
Oh, big time, especially with, guys like Aaron Sanchez, who, you haven't even heard from because he's been injured. And I don't think anyone was really expecting much from him based on his injury history. But, they need these guys. But you know who they also need and who's just been dominant and who was just named National League Pitcher of the Month?
Kevin Gausman.
Yep. Man, he has really emerged as their ace this year, and it's really great because he was great for the Giants last year, but he still had an ERA he was above 4 last year, right?
Yeah,
like, he was a solid starter, and he's been good his whole career, but he hasn't really anything like he is doing this year, though.
He's always had good stuff, but it's just like it feels like he's finally. I mean, what is he 30 now? It feels like he's finally 30. Learned how to be a complete package as a pitcher, right? And also, we've been able to kind of be careful with him. He hasn't really had to throw a lot of pitches in any games. You know what I mean? So, and you look, he's 6-0. Like, he's just, the guy doesn't lose games. It's crazy.
Yeah. For the month of May, he was 5-0 with a 0.73 ERA, 37 innings pitched, 49 strikeouts. Yeah. It's his first Pitcher of the Month award ever, and the Giants' first one since Bumgarner way back in August of 2014. Wow. So that shows you how long it's been since, there's 15 teams in the National League, right? And they give this award away, 6-7 times a year? And the Giants haven't gotten it in 7 years. So, I guess they were due, but it shows you his dominance. He's just been fantastic. And it's funny, we were talking earlier about Baseball Reference forecasting. The Dodgers playing the Giants in the wild card. If the Giants were to be in the wild card game, I don't think there's any doubt if it was happening next week, Kevin Gausman's your guy. And I mean, he's clearly a guy you're not quite like he's Madison Bumgarner, because there's no one like him. But you'd still feel good, real good about your chances going into that game.
Oh, hell yeah. Against anybody at this point.
Yeah, against any. And his splitter has just been, like you said, he's learning to harness it. It's just outrageous how much that move, not just the downward movement, but the outward movement, outside to a lefty. I mean, it's been so dominant. You're getting many swings and misses.
This game also, by the way, had some fun moments. This had the Dubon home run with the samurai sword. celebration, which, by the way, Bauer did not like. He went on Twitter and was like, "Oh, you used that against the wrong pitcher." And it's like, well, we didn't have a chance to use it against you because he didn't pitch. All right,
yeah. So he's not going to hit 5 home runs this series, and you're not pitching, so he's going to use it.
So he's going to do it, man. So shut up. But that it's funny though. A lot of people were pissed about Bauer's all that stuff, and I'm like, I love this, man. Let's do it.
Oh, yeah. Man, it's the gamesmanship. It's so much.
Yeah.
And by the way, I actually find Trevor Bauer's YouTube channel very entertaining. I don't know if you've ever watched
it. Yeah, he's like a modern day, he's a child of the internet, and he's playing professional sports and he's doing a vlog. It's great. Like,
I love it. It gives, it's not only the inside access, you know, showing kind of what happens behind the scenes. Yeah, he's an arrogant guy, but to be honest, on YouTube, he doesn't even feel that arrogant. He's just like, no, this is what we do. This is what we got. Like, he's not like, look at me, look at me. Yeah, he's just having fun and showing the fans what it's like to be a Major League Baseball player, you know?
I feel like everyone who complains about a professional athlete being arrogant is like, you just don't understand what it's like to be really good at some shit. You know what I mean? Like, you know? But it's like, the fact is, like, I think on Twitter he wasn't actually mad. I think he was playing along with the whole thing. He's if you're going to, DeBon's going to do that, he has to kind of talk a little shit back, right? So he has to go like, oh, he used it against the wrong pitcher, trying to like lessen it. But I'm sure inside he's like, aha, all right, I can't wait till I'm pitching against you guys next time. And the moment I strike somebody out to end an inning, he's going to do like a double sword or something. You know what I mean? He's going to up the ante.
He's all fatality, you know? He's going to like do something like, no, you're right. It's all in fun. And Bauer is a very smart guy. He knows how to play the game. He knows how to do the social media thing. And yeah, I'm sure he saw DeBon and was like, all right, that's cool. You know, that just means that it gives me a license to do more next time. That's basically what it does, you know? Yeah. And this isn't going to escalate to like players hit.
No, there's not going to be a bench clearing brawl. Yeah, I don't this think. Isn't I think that it's kind just going to be, yeah, it's just going to be some fun back and forth with celebrations. It's going to be good. And a lot of booing. And a lot of booing fans.
A lot of booing. Yeah, no, because Bauer has quickly become. you know, most wanted number one for Giants fans.
He's like a wrestling heel. Yeah, he's doing it. You know, he's playing the part, you know, so it's cool.
He's playing it well. Yeah, and I actually don't hate the guy. I actually kind of like Trevor, but like I was saying, like he plays the part well. He knows what he's doing. So, you know, that's why I kind of don't, I don't know, I don't have any ill will against him, I guess. But anyway.
Other than the fact, he's one of those guys that's like, if he's on your team, you love him. And if he's on the other team, you hate him.
There you go. I think that's, you know what I mean? That's a very apt comparison. Yeah. Because, look, you know, he on his YouTube channel was talking about what team he might go to. And he threw like 5, 6, 7 names out there. And the Giants were actually one of them he threw. Mm. Now, it could have been complete smokescreen, right? We don't.
Sure.
It was probably L.A. number one all along. And he talked about the Dodgers, too. But you're right. If the Giants somehow had signed him, people would be like, oh, this guy's great.
We'd be loving this kid, for sure.
Oh, he did the saber rattle to the Dodgers? Oh, I love that. He's wonderful. Yeah, yeah, you're right. It would totally be like, he's not an a-hole now. He's doing great. But yeah, that what was that second game? They won the third game. They won 11-6. And it was the final game. The Giants go up 5-0. Gosman's cruising. He even knocked in the fifth run, which proved
to be
a very important run because, they got 3 runs off of Kershaw in the first inning. It was a single that drove in a run, and then DeBon, that was where he did that saber thing.
Yeah.
He hits a 2-run bomb. By the way, that was an ugly swing. Like, it was so far in on his hands, he somehow threw that bat head out.
Well, he hit
almost one-handed it like a golf ball.
He hit the pole, right?
Yeah, and then he hit the pole, yeah.
Yeah.
And he stood there and watched, and the umpire was watching, and the catcher was watching. Everybody's just like watching.
Yeah,
like,
is it going to go out? Is it? Oh,
bing. But
by the way, that's his second home run off of Kershaw.
Yes,
and
it is.
He's done it in 6 at bats against him.
They're showing that stat. He has a double or triple too.
Yeah, they're showing that stat. I think last night or whatever, and it was, you know, all the Giants who have multiple home runs off of Kershaw. Bumgarner is one of them. Posey's one of them.
Yeah,
but they all took it. All took them like, you know, 60 at bats or something against him. And DeBon in 6 at bats. It's just killing.
Two bombs. It's like, I know. He's a little fly, man. He's kind of he pestered these. At least he's getting hot. He started the season pretty damn cold, but he's brought his average way up now. I think he's at around 270 now. So
yeah, no,
a little bit of pop.
Kid.
And by the way, watching him at third last night, I hadn't really watched him live on the left side of the field, mostly in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
We all knew he could pick it pretty well. My God, he was throwing off the wrong foot and throwing lasers over to first. Yeah. Like, to see it just in person, it had pop. I mean, they were frozen
defensively,
ropes to first.
Defensively, he's our best center fielder, our best third baseman, and our best shortstop.
I mean, there was one point where they had the shift on, so he was playing way over and right. And he cut off Solano. And Solano, of course, you know, he's been very suspect in terms of his defense.
Yeah, yeah. I think if you're Dubon,
he ran right in front of Solano, picked it up, threw off his wrong foot, threw a rifle to first. And it was like, oh, thanks for doing that, man. Because Solano was going to have it. But he literally cut him off. Because Solano also blew a double play ball last night where he was playing right behind the bag. And it wasn't even that tough of a play. It wasn't super short.
No, he just dropped
hop.
The ball.
And he just drops the ball. And then he picks it up and tags second. And then he didn't have time to throw to first. And then it was I think they walked a guy. And then that's when Rendon cleared the bases with two outs. So it was really frustrating because it was like
– it made a big difference, yeah.
It doesn't go in the books as an error, but that should have been a double play, which would have ended the inning. And they would not have scored five runs in that inning or whatever it was. And it would have been a more manageable game. And if it's 3-0 – maybe the Giants chip back. They're not pulling Posey out of the game. They're not making moves. They, you know, who knows? Like, it's just one of those things.
By the way, I have a question to pose here. Do you think we're updating all the stuff in baseball? Do you think we need to update how we score baseball, like official scoring? Because there was all these times where it was like, oh, that went 5-3. But that was hit to second base. Dude, you know what I mean?
That happens. That happens so much every game. But last night I was scoring, right?
Sure.
So every time the Giants had that,
you're
shift
like, wait,
on,
which guy got that? Like, I know he hit it over there, but which fielder was it? So that I could. It's like maybe we just need to get rid of this whole 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1 through 9 thing, and we just need to like do like by section, like where did they hit it, and you know, because it's like.
It's weird because they have all the StatCast guys, right? You walk in the back of the press box, you see the dude with the big tablet, and he's like marking where the ball was hit and fielded, and that's how that all goes in the database. You know,
I mean, but that's kind of why you—that's kind of why you go 6-3. I know that the ball was hit to the left side. If that's what happened, right? But now I don't know.
That's exactly right. So most of the time I knew it was like Dubon over there. Or, you know, Crawford over there because of the hair and all that stuff like that. But there were a couple times where I was looking at something, then there was a hit, and then I saw the play, and I'm like, who is that? And then the press box announcer on those specific plays would go, that play was 6-3. And I was like, thanks. And I'd write it down. And it was weird because there were so many 6-3s last night, at least 3 or 4 of them, where it was hit to the right side. And so if you like look in a manual scorebook, you're like, oh, he pulled it last time or hit to the left side. And you're like, no. No, he hit it too. He hit it over by second base, actually.
They actually, I did see too that they're kind of flirting with the idea of making the shift illegal, or at least kind of putting some parameters on it, like can't go out into the grass. Two players have to be on either side of second base, so you can't stack all four guys on like the right side of the field, you know.
Yep.
I don't know if I hate that, honestly. I feel like in a way, like I don't necessarily like the idea of telling defenses what they can and can't do, because obviously there's strategy to it, but we're kind of getting to the point now where it's like, I don't know, it's ridiculous. And like I said, this is why I think we've had so many no hitters this year, is because it's gotten so freaking like they've just perfected it, right? It's just, you know, they know all the ins and outs, the data down to it's an exact science almost at this point. And, you know,
the analytics are so good. And I know a lot of times the common fan is like, well, why don't they just always bunt against the shift? And it's like, yeah, they can, but it's not appropriate in every situation. And a lot of times with two outs and no one on, Brandon Belt will drop a bunt occasionally and get on first. You're not talking about a thing that's happening often. And with a guy on first with two outs, generally he's not going to score. So there's a lot of those situations where it's not that beneficial. In fact, the other team is like, the numbers say, go ahead and bunt if you want.
Yeah,
it'll still be a better outcome
doing it.
For us than if we played normal over a period of a whole season. That's what it is. It's not that individual at bat. Sure, you might win it. But over the course of a season, it's much better to do the shift than not do the shift. And so that's what the numbers do. And I don't want to see a ban of the shift. I think it's just an evolution of the game, the intelligence of the game, and how people play it. Yeah, I know averages have gone down and things like that, but I think there are other ways to combat it. You know, they deadened the ball a little bit this year. You know, they might perk it up a little bit. Stuff like that.
But here's an argument, though. If it is so awful for a team like the Astros to use modern technology to steal signs, why is it not awful to use modern technology to steal base hits by figuring out exactly where to put your fielders? Right? If technology was really the problem there, because everyone was like, I know people have been stealing signs forever, but they use the computer, man. It's like, okay, well, they're using a computer to figure out where to put these fucking guys. This is not some old school baseball guy going like, well, you know, I've been watching baseball for 50 years and it looks like that guy tends to hit the ball there. It's like, no, there's somebody crunching the data. It is a goddamn computer and an algorithm telling them where to put these guys, not my great baseball instincts. So if that's such a horrible thing and they're the Trastros now and that's cheating, why is this not cheating? And why is it not cheating to pay $50 million more than the second richest team? Or why is it not, you know what I mean? Why do we draw lines like that? You know what I mean?
The disparity in spending, I think, is problem number one with the haves and the have-nots in baseball.
It's just all this stuff. It's either all just baseball or it's not. Do you know what I mean? It's none of it's cheating or all of it is, in my opinion. I think we either need to accept it or need to shut the fuck up about everything else because computers are part of the game now or they're not.
Yeah, we have a comment right now like Mike Dowling says, why don't hitters just go the opposite way to the shift? Simple baseball, take what they give you.
It's hard because that's hard.
Because it's hard. It's not like pool, right? Where you can line up your shot and then, you know, take that angle and you still may not get it. The point being, you can control certain things to a certain extent, but especially these guys are trained to just, you know, swing from their heels now. They don't choke up at all with two strikes, right? The penalty on striking out versus the advancement in hard hit balls. By the way, hard hit balls don't always necessarily translate into home runs, but it's really about exit velocity. The higher the exit velocity is, the higher chance of a hit that you have. Now, it really increases your OPS, not your average. Mm-hmm. Sure, you could control the bat a little bit more like, let's say, a Tony Gwynn, right? Which that's a lost art, where you are choking up and you are poking it out there and literally like flicking it, you know, like a little.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of Carney Lansfords and Tony Gwynns in the game anymore, right?
Like, they just don't do that anymore. So it's not something that they can just, you know, hit the other way. Otherwise, you know, they could start doing that. But again, if any other teams were confident in individual batters' ability to do that, they wouldn't be doing the shift. And if teams were confident in their players' ability to hit the other way, they'd be telling them to do that. So the fact that we don't have either one of those happening tells us all we need to know. They can't just hit the other way. It's not like
they're pitching them for the shift as well. It's not like all of this is being done in a vacuum. They put the shift on and then they throw pitches to the spots where they know that this guy tends to pull the ball right on the ground, pull the ball into the, and you know, so it's just a big confluence of factors coming together to say, look, if we do this and that, we know that he's going to hit it here. And then that's where we're going to put the third baseman. It's going to be there instead of over there where he's basically out of the play. Right.
So it's a great point. So last night, for example, they had a new reliever that had just come in, and I forget, it was number 40. It was before Tony Watson came in. Anyway, he was up on the mound and he was facing, I think Dubon was his first batter. And I don't know if you were watching the game. It was 8-0 or 8-1 at the time, but he stands on the mound and then he takes off his hat. Right. And he's looking at his hat and then he puts it back on. He gets his signs and he steps off the rubber, takes his hat. He did that three times before he threw the first pitch. He was looking at the report going, where do I pitch Dubon, right? And what does he want to throw me? And the crowd started booing because it was taking so long for him to deliver the pitch.
Yeah, it took him like 2 minutes to throw like a pitch. And then he finally did. And like, it was,
So that's exactly what your point is that he's looking at the analytics going, okay, this is Dubon. This is this inning with this lead. Here are his strengths. Okay, I need to throw this in this area. Okay, cool. Yeah. And that's what they do. So a lot of times it's going to be hard to hit the opposite way if they're like, say, burying your hands inside, you know, or whatever. Sure. Or if they have a specific kind of pitch that is just hard to hit the other way. Yeah, it's a weird thing, man. I mean, it's the game really remained constant for so many decades.
Well, because of the lack of modern technology, really. The scouting report used to be, this guy doesn't like hard stuff, or this guy doesn't like the ball away, or you know what I mean? And that's kind of the end of it. And now it's like, okay, with 74%
of the time, he hits it to the right side.
Throw him a slider low and inside. You know what I mean? Yep. It's like, it's that precise at this point. And that's computers. You know, you talk about like when this kind of all started, and you know, the Moneyball is like kind of like, we could talk about that as being like the beginning of this era where it's like you hire people who aren't baseball people. Mm-hmm. They're fucking computer science nerds, you know what I mean? And like, they're coming in and they're applying algorithms to the game that we never were using before.
I think of it this way.
And now we're 20 years into that, so
I think of it this way. It definitely relates to poker, but you know, bluffing's not really there. But I kind of more relate it to, so let's say blackjack, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you're counting cards, you're playing by the book. So, okay, you have, you know, a 16, and the dealer is showing a 10. I'm going to hit.
Even though statistically, I'm not going to get a 5 most of the time.
Right. I'm still going to hit in that situation. Now, will I lose most of the time? I will. But my chances of success are higher if I hit than if I hold on a 16, because he's going to beat me with his whole card anyway.
Yeah.
So now, that's kind of what this
now
is.
Now, you have a 5 or whatever, and they have a 6, you stay.
You stay.
Even though you're technically losing, right? Because they're going to hit, and they're technically going to get busted most of the time. So yeah, you know, you're right. It's 100% that. It's just playing the statistical favorites, and it has nothing to its tendencies and all that stuff. And that's why, and that's, you know, I say, like, this is why we've had more no hitters, because statistically we're gonna have a few more than normal, you know what I mean? Because we're taking away a certain amount of hits. Batting averages are down. This is also why, though, you talk about guys are swinging from the heels now. Everyone's just digging in, back foot all the way on the back line. Mm-hmm. And you know, trying to lift the ball, because station to station baseball is much more difficult, because you're not going to be able to string together hits, right?
That's the problem, because averages are so much lower now.
Yeah.
The chances of getting 2 to 3 hits in a row or within an inning with just two outs, they're much lower than they used to be. So you really are relying on the extra base hits and the home
runs. And we're still talking about the game as if it's the way it used to be, right? Like get on, get over, you know, hit them in. It's not a thing anymore, man. It's like get on and hopefully somebody hits one out.
Get on and hit a blast. Yeah.
You know, it's all about, if you either strike out, you walk, or you hit a home run. That's kind of where we're at. And it's weird, but
it is weird. It is weird.
We got to get used to it, I guess.
Could you imagine growing up? I know high schoolers, you know, aren't necessarily having access to the volume of data that the pros do, but a lot of them are starting to learn about it, certainly even at their level. Could you imagine like being in high school or even in college and like having a little chart or something, you know, just like, I gotta pitch this guy.
Instead of your
coach going, this guy doesn't like the inside heat, that's it. You know, and you're like,
but okay. I mean, it's harder there because you don't have as big of a sample size. I think this is one of the big things about the major leagues. It's 162 games, it's all on film. You know, you can really, really zero in on these guys' tendencies. It's a lot different when you have 15 games in your season. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're playing with metal bats and you're like on the road and, you know, and like the field is, you know, the right side of the batter's box is like 6 inches
big
below
hole.
Home plate. Yeah. All that stuff.
You're like, I'm not going to slide into that plate. Yeah. It's like a dagger coming out of the side. Yeah. You're like, oh,
but it's the evolution of the game. And unless we want to fight back against it, we're going to have to accept that that's how it's going to be. Right. Yep. It's going to change. It's kind of like, you know, with the NBA, it's like, forever it was all about having like a 7-foot center, and now it's like, nah, just have a bunch of guards who just jack up threes all game, because you know what's worth more than 2-3.
That's the percentage kind of these guys shoot at. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you got a 40-45% 3-point shooter, mm-hmm. but he was going to shoot 60-70 from the field for two, the math says shoot more threes.
Shoot threes. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to miss a few
points
more.
Points per shot. Yeah, that's
yeah, but
is.
At the end
it's
of the day, you're scoring more points that way. So it's like, you know, it's either we fight back against it with rules about these shifts, or, you know, we let it happen. And, you know, it's kind of sucks because it means that we'll never see like another Vince Coleman or something like that. You know what I mean? Like we'll never see another Ricky Henderson. We're just going to see a lot more Fernando Tatises, who are just going to just friggin' blast the ball. And you know, I don't know, do we like it or not? I still love baseball, it's still very entertaining. It's just, It's it's different.
A different game than when you and I grew up watching in the 80s, like you said, you know, the Vince Colemans and stuff, and even the early 90s when it started to transform into a sluggers kind of thing. But now it's just, yeah, it's mostly data-driven. It's analytics. It's pitchers now consistently throwing. I read this article. I'll probably put it out on social media. Since they started StatCast with reliable computer measurements was 2002, I believe, right?
Okay.
So basically the data is just as good or very comparable in terms of velocity, spin rate, movement, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The average major league fastball back in 2002, if I recall, is like 88.2 miles per hour. And now it's like 93.
Sure.
So yeah, when you have a 5 to 7% jump in velocity in 20 years, that's a huge fact. And then that doesn't just affect velocity, because these arms have gotten so much stronger, that affects your spin rate. So you got sliders and sinkers and splitters and curves moving more than they used to as well. And their average velocity is up as well. It was crazy. I think it was the slider now. The average velocity of a slider is the old velocity of a fastball back in 2002. So, you know, I mean, could you imagine transporting back to 2002 and saying, okay, see that fastball you just got for 89? Now here's a slider at 89. Like, holy crap.
You know? No, that, I mean, that was one of the big things, the one of the reasons why like a guy like Brian Wilson was good, because his slider was, you know, in the high 80s, low 90s, right? And it's like, holy crap, that's crazy. But you're right, it's like that's like the fifth guy out of the bullpen now. Everyone's stuff is nuts, and these hitters are just kind of like, look, I'm just waiting for mistakes, man.
Well, speaking of mistakes, that's kind of what happened in that final game against the Dodgers. They had that 5-0 lead we were just talking about, and then in the eighth, boom, two-run jack. And then in the ninth, boom, two-run jack. And suddenly it's 5-4, and you're sweating bullets again. And it was just like, come on, guys. I mean, they ended up closing it out 5-4, so it was all good. But that was Barnes again. Sorry, it was Muncy. Sorry, it was Muncy.
Muncy and Pujols.
Pujols, right? Yeah. Pujols hit his third with the Dodgers or something like that. So, yeah, it was off of Littell, and then the second one, of course, was off of McGee, and that was a no-doubter. You know, Mike Stockman couldn't catch that one. That was
No.
He's like, I wish I had that one a couple nights ago. But anyway, hey, look, they went down to LA. They took 3 out of 4. That was the immediate salve that they needed. You know, not only did they just essentially return the favor from what they did in Oracle, but now they're 3-4 against the Dodgers. So they're back to, like, okay, that's good. That's competitive. They're doing fine. Then they roll it back up to Oracle. They take care of business game one against the Angels, and then they lose, you know, last night in horrible fashion. Sure. So they start the traditional June swoon. They're 0-1 in June, Willie. What are they going to do?
Uh-oh. Yeah, we can't win in June. Well, you
can't
know,
win
we'll
in June.
We'll take a day off.
They have not won this month yet. And they're not going to win today either.
No. I know. They're going to go into the third without a win. Crazy.
Can you imagine that? They're going to go to the third day of June without any wins. Oh,
now, the Cubs this year, how do we feel about the Cubs?
Well, they started the season horribly. They were like 8 games under 500. They were playing like shit. And recently in May, they made things a lot better, a lot better. And I believe they are now in first place in the Central. So, in fact, I think they're about 2.5 to 3.5 games behind the Giants in terms of the standings themselves. Mm-hmm. So they're doing
well. They're 31-23 at this point. So, yeah, they've definitely turned it around. Now, we do have Di Sclafani in the first game, and Disco's still been pretty strong. I feel good every time he's going out there. So, you know, I don't know. I feel like I just have a good feeling about this team, man. I feel like we're just, you know, no matter what happens, at some point we're going to get, like, a real slump. It's going to happen, right? Sure. But we also still haven't had, like, a legit massive hot streak. Like, we've been just consistently better than, you know, other teams, but we haven't reeled off like 9 in a row. And at some point we're going to do that too. So I don't know. It feels like a good year, man. It feels like a good year. I don't think it's going to be a swoon. We also are, by the way, our opponents over the next month. Yeah, we do have the Dodgers at the end and we get the A's, but we're also playing a lot of shitty teams, right?
Yeah.
We also got, like, the D-backs and stuff. So, I don't know. I feel like we're going to be fine.
Yeah, I wish I had it right now. It was a couple of days ago. I was looking at the – yeah, we know about the playoff scenarios, and I'm looking at it right now, right? Most likely, San Diego versus L.A. or San Francisco and Chicago at Atlanta. It was the updated win forecasts now from Baseball Reference. I don't have them right in front of me, but as of a couple of days ago, they gave that band, right, of like what is the highest projection possible that they have confidence in and what's the lowest projection possible. And their lowest was 82. So, you know, even their like 95% confidence interval, if you want to get into statistics, you know, nuts and bolts, basically they're guaranteeing, in a sense, statistically, that the Giants are going to be above 500 this year. Yeah. So even if they only win 82 games this year, I think that in itself is just a massive, massive improvement. I know it won't feel good if that happens from this point on out, but you're still talking about a team that is really exceeding expectations. And I agree with you. I think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, teams on the schedule here they can get healthy against. And they've been hanging against, you know, the Padres and the Dodgers and the other good teams. But the Cubs are going to be a good test. They're above 500. The A's are going to be a good test, leading the American League West. So it's going to be interesting. But that first series against the A's at Oracle Park will be interesting because it'll be the first full venue. The Giants are
Oh, that's right. That's when they're opening up.
Yeah, to full capacity. So, I mean, you know, there's a little bit of a home field advantage in that regard. So it'll be fun to see if that has any effect. But yeah, you know, they're doing well. So I don't know. I'm giving them an A minus right now. An A. Not even A minus.
They're A. By the way, I don't know if you ever look at them, but the power rankings now have them in the top five.
Yeah. They've been Giants. In the top five for a couple of weeks now. I know when it first started, they were still down at like 16. And you're like,
yeah
they clearly like, don't believe this is real.
Best team in baseball, but everyone was like, you know, whatever. Yeah. I really do think that Dodgers series where we took 3 out of 4, that was kind of like we shut people up. You know what I mean? Like we were like, hey. Because when you lost 3 in a row to them, it definitely felt like, okay, maybe it was a mirage, right? You know, maybe we've just been beaten up on crappy baseball teams. And then the Dodgers come in and whoop on us. And yeah, like we did play strong against the Padres, but it wasn't like we were whooping on them. We were just playing them strong. It was very close baseball. And now, you know, take a 3 out of 4 and, you know, a blowout in there. So, you know, a couple strong wins. I really do think that shut everybody up. Now everyone's like, oh, fuck. I guess we have to think about the Giants.
Well, I mean, they're even 500 against the Padres and Dodgers combined, right? So, yeah, I mean, they're 8-8 against those two teams combined. So, I mean, they're hanging with the big boys, you know, that they, you know, the love child of MLB and ESPN. They can't shut up about Tatis and the Dodgers. Like, I'm just.
We are the big boys.
I'm getting sick of it, but that's okay. I'd rather be the underdog and surprise rather than, you know, be the pick and then fall on your face. Mm-hmm. Which that did happen back in, what, 2015?
Yeah.
Defending world champions, and they had, like, you know, ridiculous amount of losses that year in 2015. All right, let's talk a little bit about injuries and transactions. The list is so long these days. Like, we were talking about the moves that he makes, that Farhan and company makes, is just so long, not only from the interchangeable parts perspective, but from the injury perspective. And you had guys, like, we didn't even mention him, Scott Kazmir, who comes in and has his first appearance in 5 years, you know, the 36 or 37-year-old. And he pitched well, you know, against the Dodgers that one game. He was fine. The second game he pitched down in L.A., not so much. That's when Dodgers started to come back a little bit. They still won. That was that 11-6 game, so it wasn't that big of a deal. and he was just put on the restricted list. And so that might be one of those cunning chess moves that Farhan is able to use in his arsenal. Like, yeah, we put him on the restricted list. Well, what does that mean? Undisclosed nature, you know, kind of thing. It's like, well, do they just do that to bring up a couple of relievers for 5 days and then they'll have to, you know, outright someone, they'll have to DFA someone. I mean, this is the games that he plays. He seems like he's always looking, you know, 3 weeks in advance of like, okay, in 2 weeks, when this guy comes off of the IL, you know, we need to make room on the 40-man, so then we need to get this guy, but this guy's out of options, you know, and they just do this whole maneuver. I admit, if you're a bubble player, you know, you got to perform. Otherwise, you might be DFA'd under Farhan. I'm just saying. It's like.
Yeah, you don't have a lot of time to prove yourself. They're not going to give you a long leash, but.
There's no love lost. He's like, I like you, but bye-bye. You know, we'll see you later. But, they called up this guy who's been in the majors like 7 years, Dominic Leone, last night. He has a high strikeout potential, and he has his whole career. Blew a couple guys away last night, looked good. Sam Delaplane they got from the Mariners. He was just called up yesterday. Kurt Casale placed on the 10-day IL. Chadwick Trump was called up, not Joey Bart. I know a lot of people were pissed about that. But There's a couple of reasons. One, Joey Bart is still going to get more reps in the minors, okay? He is not going to get as many reps in the majors because of Buster Posey. And number two, he's coming off of a thumb injury. You know, they're just taking it. They just want to make sure he's okay. You know, I think this makes sense. Joey Bart, you know, was called up last year, played a good portion of the season, and just didn't do well.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, at this point, Posey's the guy. And so until Bart's the guy, I'm fine with him not being up here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know why people are calling for it. It's like, it's okay. He's not going to make a huge difference at this point because he's going to have limited ABs anyway. Yes, I know he's a better hitter in theory than Kurt Casale, who's hitting under 100.
Well, Kurt Casale, it's not hard to be a better hitter.
No. I'm going to pull out social media. Even I could hit, but no, I'm just kidding. yeah, that's what some people would say. But the pitchers love him. They love throwing to him. And we saw some of those issues last year with member Johnny Cueto and Joey Bart. They could never get on the same page.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Joey Bart may just have an issue with, you know, just learning more and maturing more as a defensive catcher and someone who's got to be simpatico with his battery mate. So, long-time face, Connor Menez made his debut for the Giants again, or this year's debut. He's been up and down with the Giants for years now. We talked about Kazmir. Berger went on the 10-day IL with left elbow inflammation. Nick Tropiano was called up. He was just sent back down. Logan Webb came off. John Brebbia, who, of course, is coming off of Tommy John surgery, is now rehabbing down in the minors, and apparently he's looking really good. Selman was sent to the minors. Whistler's been up and down. Wade was called up. Ruff is placed on the 10-day IL with a strained right hamstring, and he was looking really good, by the way. He's starting to get, like, primary first base time, and he just and he was crushing the ball, but he ended up hurting his hamstring running out of ball around first, I think. And the list goes on and on. We got Brandon Belt, who, gee, he's hurt again. Surprise.
Yeah.
And it goes on and on. But again.
And also, it was last night.
Oh,
goes
yeah.
to make a catch. It busts his thumb up again or something. Like, apparently the x-rays were negative, but it looked bad. It looked like he was in a lot of pain. So it's just
sprained.
Yeah, it's just like nonstop. And the fact is, the Giants have been doing this all year, essentially. Like, we're one of the better teams in baseball. We haven't really ever just been healthy, you know, for an extended period of time.
Yeah. And then, of course, Longoria with a strained oblique. He has MRI results.
Old man tightness.
Old man tightness. It's like, it's called being 35. Hell, I'm 47. Yeah. I know exactly how that feels.
He just, he can't ever stay in the lineup for longer than like a week straight. You know, it's just,
yeah.
There's a lot of downtime, apparently.
Yeah, the MRI showed just a mild sprain, so he may play on Thursday. I doubt it. I think he's going to take
a few
days off.
The home run he hit the other day was a solid swing, though. I mean, he definitely he's gotten his swing back because he was, you know, kind of slumping there for a little bit, and now he seems to be back. So we're hoping that, you know, he can get and stay healthy.
Yeah, overall splits are great. 274, nine home runs. I mean, I wouldn't have expected it from Longo at this point in the year. So, and he's got another year left on his contract, so he's still going to be with the Giants next year. And it'll be interesting. There's so many things to talk about as, you know, we get further into the year, especially as we near the trade deadline. But, you know, we got Buster Posey, who has the club option for the next year. And at the beginning of the year, we weren't even thinking it was a possibility, given his last 2 years.
Yeah.
But now it's suddenly like, huh. Club option for $22 million.
I know.
You buy
and
him out
Crawford.
For
it's not
Crawford
just Posey.
Too.
It's Crawford yeah. might be yeah. a guy where we're like, hey, you know, you got another year in you, right?
Yeah.
These guys
Crawford's
are
leading
these
the
guys
team
are,
in bombs. So
yeah, big surprises, which is great because I think, you know, like you know, we're talking about Bart, and also our other big prospect is a shortstop, and so it's like maybe we need one more year out of both of these guys before
to get
those
the
guys are really ready.
Ready.
So it's kind of nice.
We get Bart and And
Luciano.
Ramos and Luciano. Yep, they all got to get ready. So, yeah, Luciano's still only 19, but he's
19 years old. I know, you're like, oh, let me see this kid. And you're like, oh, he's 19. All right,
yeah.
Never mind.
You're like, never mind. He's definitely got some more seasoning to go on. So a couple more things. One real quick. I did get a question on Twitter from Hank Alonzo. Was asking if we could discuss the Giants, if the Giants should acquire a proven closer at the trade deadline if one is available. It is interesting. I think at the beginning of the year, we all thought the Giants would be sellers at the trade.
I mean, a proven closer is hard to get. Mm-hmm. Like, what teams are really going to be like, yeah, just take a closer. We don't need him anymore. You know, even if they're sell, like, it's a lot to give up. I kind of get the sense it's not really far on style. I think more
I agree with you.
Yeah, he'll just pick up whatever is solid and cheap and then just say, all right, platoon that ninth inning, figure out who's got it going. Because that's kind of how we've been doing it so far. It's just like whoever's doing good at the time, that's the guy. We don't just have a guy for 162 games who's just always going to be the closer.
Yeah, so. I think, you know, teams like, let's say the Pirates have Rodriguez as their closer, right? He's a good closer for a team that's not going anywhere. That would be like a hypothetical, right? Maybe the Pirates are looking
but they're going to want a lot. Depth. They're going to want
a
bunch of prospects. You know what I mean?
And Farhan's whole MO for his, you know, 1.5 years, 2 years, or whatever it's been, 2.5 years with the team, has been building depth from within and in the system. It's just like house money, not house money, but it's just building up his bank account. But it's not ready for showtime yet, right? So he's still doing retreads, minor leaguers, journeymen, whatever, just to put a productive, decent quality product on the field. And obviously it's blown expectations away this particular year. I mean, this performance is 2 years ahead of schedule easily, right? So there's no way that Farhan at this point is, like you just said, going to be like, okay, we're going to give away a Ramos or Luciano or some other mid-level prospect, maybe not the very top, or several prospects for a rent-a-closer who would be good for the last 2.5 months of the season. It might save a game or two extra over expected over your current committee situation. So that's where you look at the value. And he does all this stuff, right? He has all these algorithms and spreadsheets and a billion things like that. And it's like, if it cost us nothing, yes, I would like a proven closer because that could improve our expected wins by 1.7 or 2.2 or whatever. And that could make a difference in the playoff run. But it will cost us A, B, C, D, and E, which down the road is going to cost us dozens of wins, right?
Yeah.
So that's he's playing the long game all the time. And I know some fans want to win now. And it would be great if they somehow get in the postseason this year.
I mean,
I don't see it happening.
I would honestly like to be good for, you know, many, many years in a row. But also there's a weird thing too, and I wonder what the statistics would show if you really get down to the nitty gritty on this. But you know, the ninth inning isn't more important statistically than the sixth inning or the fifth inning or the fourth inning, right? Like, it's the last inning, so we all remember it and we pay attention to it. But is the closer not really a modern day thing anymore? Like, it kind of feels like there's less and less guys that we pay attention to. You know, it was like, I really felt like in the 90s that was like the height of like closers, right? Like this guy, like we had the Dennis Eckersleys and all that stuff, right?
Mariano Rivera and Hoffman.
It feels like we're kind of going away from that, where it's like, you know, and we got to think about things differently. This baseball's changing in lots of different ways, not just the shifts and all that stuff. It's like, you know, the matchups are more important than like just this guy.
Yep.
You know, looking at exactly who's up in the ninth inning. That's what I care about more than who's up in the bullpen in the ninth inning. You know what I mean? It's like, who's hitting? Well, put in the right guys for that, because, you know, that's going to make more of a difference, I think, in the long, you know. So if he makes a move there, I think really it's just fill in your bullpen with guys who can be flexible, arms that can pitch when they're needed, right? It used to always be like these very defined roles. You had like your long guy, you know, the guy who could come in and throw five innings or whatever out of the bullpen. And you had your setup man. You're like, you know, like think about like the A's in when their little 3-in-a-row run or whatever. They had a seventh inning guy, an eighth inning guy, a ninth inning guy. You know what I mean? It was like you knew which guy was coming in every single inning. And it's just, I don't think we play baseball like that anymore. So I don't know if that's our biggest hole at this point.
Exactly. I think the closer by committee thing is going to get them to the point they need to be, right? So, it's what you said is really apparent, not just in, I think, in the lack of attention of closers these days. No one's talking about Aroldis Chapman as much, right? Or these kind of guys. There's just not as many of them. There's a lot of closers I've never even heard of, and they're a closer for about a month before they flame out, and they got to try another guy, right, on whatever team. And it's really apparent, like on my fantasy, you know, league, right? We have 16 teams, so unfortunately, it gets really thin. Right. And you expect to have 2 to 3 closers potentially on your roster. And it's like there's not that many closers, not just because of the math, but of course there's so many teams doing closer by committee, or they nominate a closer and he flames out at the end of April and they got another guy you've never even heard of taking his role. So
I mean, honestly,
that role's really been diminished.
Yeah, closers do flame out. There's not a lot of Riveras out in the world, right? I mean, you think about the Giants, like, think about our best closers, right? They all had really short careers. Yeah,
Rob Nen, Brian Wilson, Steve Bedrosian, Rod Beck. Yeah, these guys were only around for three, 4 years.
A couple of solid years, and then, you know, and I think this is the other thing. When you tell the guy you're the closer, every time we're up three, you're coming in, right? And you're throwing as hard as you can for that inning. Oh, we're on a seven-game win streak? Well, you just pitched 7 days in a row.
Yeah,
you know, it's just too much. It's too much on a guy. And Rob Nen literally ended his career trying to get us a World Series in 2002.
Yep.
You know, and I think Madison Bumgarner in a way kind of ended his career in 2014. Like when you use these guys up, and this is why you start to see this year, it's like pitch counts are way down. We're not letting pitchers go to the eighth, ninth inning anymore. This all has to be computer data driven stuff. You know what I mean? It's like we know now what matchups are good and bad, where to put infielders, outfielders, blah, blah, blah. And we also know how to be using pitchers so that they can not injure themselves. So, yeah, it's just a different world, man. It's weird. We have to adapt as fans, too.
Yeah, by the way, it was interesting. I always like to revisit, you know, Madison Bumgarner. We talked about him on this show and, of course, on our Hard Edition podcast about his seven-inning no-hitter. Since then, he's had three starts. Okay, so this is in order after his seven-inning no-hitter. His, what was it? Notable achievement, they called it, right? Yeah. Against L.A., 4 innings, 2 earned runs. Against Colorado, 6 innings, 5 earned runs. Against St. Louis, 4 innings, 6 earned runs.
Wow. Oof.
Yikes. So, yeah, his ERA ballooned after that no-hitter from 4.12 to 5.15. So, Jeez. Yeah, I know. It's like you saw him starting to turn a corner, and you're like, oh, man, maybe old Mad Bum's back. And then it's like, nope, kind of crapped the bed the last three.
So. Everybody gets old, man.
Yeah, you know, the Giants didn't re-sign him at the most appropriate time. I still was hoping they would have traded him that you know, whatever it was 2 years ago, but and get some value for it.
Oh, yeah, but then surprisingly were competing.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like, well, we're hanging in the race. So, you know, Farhan said, yeah, I owed it to the team and to the players to give this a shot. Otherwise, they would have been looking for a
start. I think, honestly, it's, you know, if you're in the locker room and you're selling when you're like a few games back, like, come on. Like,
Yeah, then the players go, like, well, screw you. You didn't believe in us. Yeah,
it's like exactly. One of those things. And then, you know, honestly, that builds bad will for future free agent signings. So,
because then they're like, yeah, back in 2019 when they were in the race, they still got rid of their horse and their ace. Like, why would you do that? Yeah, exactly. All right. So coming up, we just mentioned it. They'll be playing the Cubs this weekend for 4 games. And hopefully we'll be back Monday to record our next episode on a short turnaround. But one of the things that's happening this weekend is on Saturday, the Giants will be wearing Pride-themed uniforms, and they're going to be the first Major League team to acknowledge Pride Month with official uniforms. So I think that's freaking cool. I love it. You know, and for those of you that don't like it, well, what's, you know, they do pink bats and camo hats and blue font for Father's Day. And like, they, you know, come on, they all wear 42 for Jackie Robinson Day. This is like, what, going to be a rainbow SF on their hat. But I don't think they've revealed what's going to be on the uniform itself.
Yeah, we haven't really seen the full uni, but the hat does look cool with the flag and the SF.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're going to see a ton of those around town in San Francisco. So, yeah, it's very cool. And essentially they are the first team to do this. So, once again, kind of trendsetters in Major League Baseball.
So the official statement from the Giants is that they will kick off Pride Month by wearing a San Francisco logo Pride patch on the right sleeve of their home jersey and a custom cap that incorporates the Pride colors into the SF logo for their game against the Cubs on Saturday. So,
yeah, I'll definitely pick up one of those hats, man. They're super cool. I think it's
pretty neat.
Yeah. I need a new Giants hat. I was going to get, you know, my tried and trusty classic Giants hat, but I might just grab one of those, you know, just wear my old ratty regular one.
Oh, crap. And then, of course, I click on the San Francisco Giants tweet with that announcement and the first comment right under it. Nobody cares. Play baseball. That's it. So there you go.
Dribble.
God damn it. I swear to God, people are just...
But we should definitely stop the game on Memorial Day to have a moment of silence.
I just love how we...
That I'm all
media.
About. But yeah, anybody else? No.
No.
Nor them. No. Pretend they don't exist.
Not for those people.
Don't shove it in my face.
Sorry, we had a little pregame discussion about this stuff, how some people are just... Anyway, we won't get into that. This is a baseball show, not a political show, but that's okay. All right, well, that's going to do it for episode 226 of the Torchcast. Thanks for hanging with us, and for the small delay, we'll be back on Monday. You can follow us collectively at Torchcast on Twitter. You can also find us on Facebook. If you're watching us live, you know where that is. We'll also keep those shows up for video. You can get our audio podcast, if you're listening to that, on your favorite podcast feed, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, etc. You can follow us individually at Willie Dills for Willie, at Chad K21 for myself, at 2OutHits with a number 2 for the absent Eric, who should be back next Monday.
He'll probably be back next week, so...
Yeah, and so what you got going on? Well, you got a lot of stuff. You got MGA, you got pool, we got Heart Edition,
yeah.
You got streaming.
Well, everything should be kind of relaxed for the rest of the month now. We're just kind of settling back in. But yeah, I had that big pool tournament. Also had an MGA tournament that they both landed on the same weekend. So Ty luckily stepped in, our good buddy Ty, and he ran the tournament for me. We actually had a weird incident, which is kind of funny. A guy showed up late. And so they went out and they just, you know, they started the tournament and then he showed up and then was like mad at everybody else. It's like,
wait,
bro, you weren't here.
You were the one that wasn't here.
Yeah. Like we're supposed to wait for you. It's a golf course. Like they don't just let us wait. You know,
they have tee times. Go. Oh, yeah. Except when your buddy's late, then you can hold up everything.
Sure. Yeah. Hold up the whole course. Yeah. But you know, I ended up missing out on that, but you know, mostly just Heart Edition. We might be having to switch that to Mondays. I'll talk to you more about that, Chad,
sure.
But Ty just got a new job and apparently he's always working on Tuesdays now. So let's figure that one out. And then, there's a new Hearthstone mini set out. So I should be streaming some of that the rest of the week. So twitch.tv/WillieDills, where you can find that.
Sweet. Yeah. Join us over for Heart Edition, like Willie said. It's fun. We do talk about the politics there.
If you want to hear my real thoughts on people who don't like the gays, that's where you'll hear them.
Yeah, we'll talk about all sorts of things. People are anti-vaxxers who die of COVID.
Oh, man.
People don't like pride hats for whatever reason, because I guess it's in their face. But, you know, other
uniforms
are okay.
I'm telling you.
That's where you want to go check that stuff out. So anyway, all right, well, that'll do it for Willie and for myself. We'll see you next week for episode 227. Until then, have a great weekend and stay safe, everyone. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TorchCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TorchCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at TorchCast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.